Hello, everyone. Welcome to Office Hours. Here's how we roll. If you want to be coached today, go ahead and raise your hand. You have a little hand at the bottom of your screen. If you want to just ask me a question, you can do so in the Q&A. I will do those probably at the end of the call, or unless there is time within the call, I will do them then. If you all want to chat amongst yourselves, use the chat feature. I may not see what's going on over there. So you guys can talk amongst yourselves, but if you have a question for me, make sure you put it in the Q&A. All right, so we can get started. Oh, yay, there's hands raised. All right. M. Coppin, you are first. Hello. Oh, can I hear you? Say something. Oh, I can't hear you. Do you have headphones in? No. There's see in the bottom left-hand corner of your screen. See if you can see if there's a way you can mute or unmute yourself. Oh, turned off your video. Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take you back down to attendee. I want you to log out of Zoom and log back in and watch for, oh, make sure you can't talk. You can't, can you see? Okay. Watch for, I'm going to take you back down, get out of Zoom and come back in and watch for the little bar that comes across that says join audio. Okay, make sure you click that and I will take you second. Okay, I'll make a note. Okay, just raise your hand again so I can find you. All right, let's move on here to Lindsay. Hi.
Hi.
Oh, I can hear you. Perfect. How you doing?
If it would work or not. I'm good. Thanks.
Good. What's up?
Well, it's good to be on here. I just first need to say some thanks because I've listening to you and Corinne since January I found you and then joined the tribe in April. So it's been awesome to learn more about myself and everything. And weight loss has been one of those things that has been something that like, I feel like so many other things have I've been able to do and accomplish. And this is one of those things I feel like I've never been able to tackle, but I'm really getting there now. So
good. Awesome.
So I appreciate that. But
weight loss is all about, all starts in your mind. You know,
yeah.
What so many places don't teach is if you can figure out the brain part of it, you're gold.
And that's the difference. You know, I've been able to lose weight before, but never maintain it. And so, but I was listening to a coaching call that you did last week. And, I think it was just last week and you were talking about the having manuals for people. Mm-hmm. And, I know that's a big, challenge for me. And I had a situation this last week that made me, kind of do some writing on it and some different things, because I feel like I walk around in the world with manuals for everybody and especially my husband and especially my kids. One day last week, well, it was actually on, the third. So I was just cranky and crabby and like impatient and, just not in a good mood all day. And that's definitely not my best self. And I also don't feel like I'm putting my best self forward for the kids. Mm-hmm. So I did a model on it and I guess I just wanted to have some more conversation about it because, so this isn't part of my model, but one of the questions that I ask myself in the reflections is how do I handle the million interruptions in the midst of the agenda that I have in my head about what should be happening. Mm-hmm. And I know million interruptions is a thought, but, And so for me right now, one of the things that I'm doing is I'm also, I work full time, you know, I'm a mom of three, and I'm also working on my doctorate. And so I have to figure out how to, and I've been pretty good about prioritizing my time, but it seems like when I feel like I have a deadline, that's when I get a lot more, you know, I think I have it all handled and I'm whatever, but it shows up in my behaviors towards them and to my husband too, and things like that. So, so I did a couple models. I have work to get done for school. And then I said, my thought was the kids keep interrupting me and I have to keep stopping. And it was really hard, for me because I was writing, which is requires the most concentration for me. And then I said that creates like frustration and anger. And then I get sarcastic. I'll raise my voice. I'm impatient. And then I don't feel like I show up as my best self. And then the other one was I have work to get done. So this was my intentional one. The kids might have questions, but they can leave me a note. And then I said with that, then I feel accomplished and proud. I get my work done. And then I have quality time to spend with them later.
Okay. So go back to the thought in the unintentional model.
So that was the kids keep interrupting me and I have to keep stopping.
Okay. I think that thought is better written. They shouldn't interrupt me.
Okay.
Right. Cause that's really the heart of it.
It is. Yes.
So it's almost like, you know, you could put in the C line, the number of times they interrupted you. The kids interrupted me 6 times in the past 30 minutes. They shouldn't interrupt me.
Okay.
Okay. Because that's, if you want to talk about your model, that's your model for them. They should not need their mother when she is working on her writing. Right.
Well, and they don't, it's like one of those things where they couldn't, I mean, I think the day before I was interrupted one time and they were all doing their own thing. But it seems like when I sit down to do something that's, you know, then it's, and it I mean, it's, you know, nothing. It's just little things. So, right.
But it bothers you because that's not where you want your focus to be.
Yeah. Okay.
And I have little things, but those things don't bother, you know, if you're not writing or if you're not, you know, working or whatever, it's like, you know, they don't know the difference. How old are they?
So 9, 11, and 13. Okay. So, and the 9-year-old is probably the worst. That's my daughter, in terms of this. So, but what I hate about it, I'm going to say hate, but is that I don't feel like I'm being a good model to them in terms of how to handle, like when something comes up and you're interrupted. So that's the other thing that I'm working through, because like, I want to be my best self and I don't, you know, I don't want to show those behaviors because then I don't want them to be that way with each other or.
Okay. So that's the second part of this. The first part is they shouldn't interrupt me.
Yeah.
The husband should be taking care of things, you know, whatever it is, right? Those are the manuals.
Yes.
The intriguing thing about a manual is we all have them. Okay. You're not, I don't want you to ever think that in an ideal world, you won't have manuals for people, because you always will.
Okay.
The problem with having a manual for someone is that that manual is set up. Many times it's not communicated, but it's set up for them to do things that make you happy. And they can't do things that make you happy. Because if you think about the model, happiness comes from your own thought. They can do things. You can have a thought about it that makes you happy. Okay. So husband takes care of the kids. He's a great guy. Happy. Right. Husband takes care of the kids. He should have asked me before he did that. Angry. Right. You apply that thought to whatever he's doing. Okay. And so you have a manual for him and for the kids that you've set up so that you can be happy rather than creating happiness with your own thoughts. That's the problem with the manual. Does that make sense?
Yes. And I mean, I would say that the manual for my husband is enormous. And
it's the Chilton's manual that I talked about.
Yes. And I know that it creates, you know, tension just because I know that I have thoughts about him all the time. And I mean, he is an awesome guy, and he does, you know, things, and, you know, and he's supportive and understanding and all those things. But yeah, but the other thing that I don't like is I didn't like the feelings that I had all day. Like, I was just so grouchy and so, you know, and this isn't just like that day. I mean, this happens mm-hmm. to me mm-hmm. frequently. So
have you asked yourself why you have those feelings? If you're grouchy and cranky, it's probably not because someone interrupted you.
Well, I think it's wrapped up in me feeling the pressure on myself of meeting the deadline that's arbitrary. Right. Yeah. No, and sometimes I know that in the past, I've been reflective enough to know that being tired does impact that, but I, you know, have been really mindful of getting enough rest and things like that, especially through following the four basics. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't tired. Yeah, it was, I wasn't working fast enough. And I am, that's the thing. Like, I have a manual for myself.
That yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
So trying to work through that. No, that's absolutely. It's because so in this work that I was doing isn't even actually due till the end of the month, but mm-hmm. we're going on vacation next week. And so mm-hmm. I put a deadline on myself because I wanted to get it done and not have to worry about it. And right. yeah, no, that's exactly what it is.
Okay.
So, and that's the part too. I judge myself a lot over mm-hmm. and over and over about everything. So,
so that's what it comes down to, is the self-judgment.
Yeah.
The self-judgment never comes out, you know, oh, I'm fantastic. Right. Unless you're Corinne. Yes. And she's only gotten to that point because she's worked through all this yuck in the yeah. meantime.
Right? Yeah.
All these self-judgment thoughts in the meantime. Uh-huh. So you may or may not have heard this talk, but she and I were podcasting not too long ago. And she was talking about, you know, you do all this and you do it without judging yourself and you do all this without self-judgment. And I was like, just wait just a minute. We need to like do a podcast on self-judgment, because you're saying just do this without judgment. And even I don't know how to do that. Mm-hmm. And she's like, what are you talking about? Blah, 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 blah. As you can imagine, right? So I asked her, I said, well, really, when somebody asks me, how do I stop self-judgment? How do I stop? You know, you find the core thought. For me, it's I'm not good enough, right? Yours might be that. It might be I don't work fast enough. I'm not smart enough. Whatever it is, whatever that core self-judgment thought is, and you hear it and you recognize where it plays out in your life. Okay? So I'll just use myself as an example. My poison self-judgment thought, like I said, is I'm not good enough. I came home from that podcasting day, and I wrote down everywhere in my life I wasn't good enough. Okay? And I came up with 8 different places. All right? And I'm sure there's more that I have this thought that comes into my brain. So I asked her, I said, what do I do with that? What do I do with that thought? And she said, you just allow it to be there, mm-hmm. and you don't act on it. It's just like having an urge to eat. You can either sit with that urge and allow it to be there and allow it to pass, have a glass of water, move on, or you can fight the urge. You can say it shouldn't be there. You can resist it. You can get angry at it. And eventually you're going to act on it because you're doing all the resistance part, right? If you just allow those self-judgment thoughts to come in and you say, hey, wait a minute, you're very practiced. I see you, and I really know that you're not true because of this. Like, if I tell myself I'm not a good enough grandmother, or I'm not a good enough wife, let's just say I'm not a good enough wife, I can look, you know, across the hallway and see my husband standing there. He's been standing there for 32 years, so I must be a good enough wife. Mm-hmm. You declare that, you create that declarative sentence that totally nullifies the thought. So when I hear, well, I must not be a good enough wife, he's upset with me, I think, no, I am a good enough wife because he's still here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's where self-judgment becomes more of a thought that kind of flies by that you don't let land and you don't put into action. Okay. Because for me, I can stew all day long and I'm not good enough. I have all the reasons. I have all the evidence. You know, it's just what we do, right? Because that's where my brain lived for so long.
Yeah.
But if I don't let it stew, if I say, there's that thought again today, you know, that, and that's what Corinne told me to do. She said, you just stop thinking it. You just tell yourself, there it is. You know, you don't get to take up residence today. Then you move on and you don't have to spend all that time fighting it and stewing in it. So for you, with all this self-judgment you have about having to get things done at a certain time or not working fast enough or not being able to concentrate or, and then being a victim to these manuals that you have, you just stop and you say, you know what? I can work. I can do as much work as I can today. And what I get done is what I was supposed to get done. Because that's, you may as well decide that because that's what you got done.
Right.
And right? You can label it as not enough or you can label it as just enough. You get to choose.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's interesting that you talk about this. I mean, and I was writing notes because one of the thoughts that I had when I started listening to both of you in January is that I was overwhelmed and I've been able to let that thought come in and like change my brain around it. And that I don't tell myself that anymore. I mean, it's come in a few times, but it's definitely less frequent.
Yeah.
But I guess I didn't really, because in the moment, I feel like I pop off, you know, like it's almost like I have this urge to get angry in the moment. Corinne's talked about it a couple of different times and that I would like to get there where, you know, I have enough control that, that I don't have to, like something in the moment doesn't have to accelerate me, tick me off, you know.
So what if you decide you do have control?
No, I think I can get there, but I don't think I'm there yet. Mm-hmm. So,
well, you have to practice the thought.
Right. Right.
I don't need to pop off. I need to breathe. And then I need to decide how I'm going to react.
Cause in the moment that does not come in at all. It frustration, anger, impatience, all those things.
Yeah. I do the same thing to my husband. Ever since I came home and he was working at home when I came home to start working.
Yeah.
I will have my door closed, which should be a sign.
Yes.
And he'll come in and he'll go, hey, what are we having for lunch? And I'll be like, are you kidding me?
Right.
That's how I reacted at first. And then I thought, you know what? This is not helping either one of us.
Mm-mm.
So I always breathe. And then I look up at him and I say, if you'll go to here in the refrigerator, that's where all the prepped lunches are. And I'll be done in a few minutes. And you know, it just takes practice. It takes awareness, knowing that you're doing it. And it takes you actually practicing in your mind and deciding ahead of time how you're going to react when it happens to actually do that. You know, visualization, just, you know, practicing in your mind is visualization, basically, is your brain doesn't know the difference.
Right.
If you practice it 20 times in your mind, your brain thinks you've got it. Right. So decide when the kids come to ask you a question or interrupt you or whatever, decide how you're going to react. And it may just be taking a minute and pausing and biting a hole through your tongue and deciding how you want to react rather than popping off.
Yeah, that's exactly. I know that, you know, I would be a better model for them because I'm judging myself about not being a good enough, you know,
right?
model for them.
Right.
And I know that it would also, you know, just, I mean, it would just even enhance my relationship with my husband. Cause I feel like, you know, it's, I don't know. When he tells me things sometimes I want to judge the heck out of what he's telling me. And it's like, that's his decision. And I've listened to you and Corinne say that enough, but it's like, oh, it's so hard. So, I mean, do you recommend to just like journaling a lot about it or?
There's never anything wrong with journaling. Okay.
Yeah.
There's, you're never going to hurt yourself by journaling for sure. The other thing I want to point out to you though, is you put a lot of pressure on yourself.
Very much.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you have thoughts in there that you should be doing something or you should be doing it this
always. Way.
You should. Whenever you see should, you need to really pay attention.
Okay.
Because that's, should is not a pretty word. Okay. Should is not a motivating word. Should actually brings up urgency or doubt or something, you know, brings up less than, you know, you should be able to do this, right? I should be doing that. It just means that you're not doing something that you are almost being critical of yourself for not doing. Okay. If you look at the deadlines you create as deadlines you control and you have authority over, then it's a huge game changer as opposed to you setting a deadline and thinking, this is the end all be all. I should be able to make this. You know, you don't have authority over it. You give it the authority. You give it the emotion and the power to rule you rather than you saying, this is what I can complete today.
Yeah.
This is what I intend to complete today. And if I do this, I'm going to feel really good when I'm done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like being very intentional with how you think about your time and how you create your time blocks, your time delegations. Corinne is actually going to do in August, she's going to do a whole time management course, which is going to be extraordinary because every time she does a course, I'm like, good grief, this is the best one she's ever done. I mean, seriously. But she's been teaching the team some of the things, not all of them, but some of the things about creating our own deadlines and creating our own time blocks that have just been a huge game changer for me. So I'm sure that if you'll work that course, I'm sure you'll find a lot of good benefit from it.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at, you know, managing and scheduling, but I think it goes back to the core thought that you said that I'm never good enough. I mean, I think that that's, you know, in every aspect. So, yeah.
Well, do this. Here's your homework. Make a list of all the places you're not good enough. I'm not a good enough wife. I'm not a good enough mother. I'm not a good enough student. All the places. You'll probably have 10 or 12 or more. Okay?
Okay.
Then ask yourself after each one, is this the truth? Okay? Chances are the answers are going to be no to every one of them.
Right.
Then you answer in one good, strong sentence why it's not the truth. Just like I did for my husband. I'm not a good enough wife. Is that the truth? No. He's still here after 32 years.
Okay.
And keep that at the ready. Because every time you hear that thought, you can look at that sentence and go, oh yeah, that's right. Of course that's not true. It's been a huge changer for me. A huge thing for me. Okay?
Yes. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
No, I really appreciate talking with you. And I do have to give a shout out to my accountability group, the Shady Ladies. So
Shady Ladies.
Formed recently, but we really stepped up our efforts here in the last week or so. So now that we've been part of the Gift of Fat, so we're all excited. So, yeah.
Great. Well, very good. All right. Well, enjoy vacation.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. See ya.
Bye, Kathy.
Bye. All right. M. Coppin. See if you are ready. My voice is calming, huh? That's hilarious. I don't know if Ken would agree. All right. Oh, that should work.
Can you hear me now?
I can.
Yay.
Yay. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. A little nervous. I also have a husband thing.
Okay.
Or communication thing.
Mm-hmm.
So often it just seems like we're from very different points of view. For instance, we just moved into a house and about 4 weeks ago, and we have been working very hard to get everything ready. Mm-hmm. It also is my daughter's birthday, so I wanted to have a small amount of people over.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, but the house isn't ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it is ready. And it's ready enough. Like, I don't think that anybody here is gonna worry about whether or not we're on a folding table or a dining room table. And he's like, well, I feel like it's not ready. And, you know, I was like, well, if it's going to be perfect, we'll never have people over. Like, if it has to be perfect. And he's like, no, that's not how it is. I just feel like it's like I can't provide by not having everything ready. And I don't even know where to go, because I feel like we're coming at it from two totally different views.
Okay. So what if you are?
Well,
I mean, do you think he should have all the same thoughts that you have?
No. And I know that we have different thoughts, and mm-hmm. I said, you know, people aren't going to care if what we have, they know we just moved into a house.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I understand you feel that way, but I don't think other people think that way at all. And he's just...
But he thinks that way.
Right. He thinks that way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm like, okay, well, we're still only having a small number of people. I don't know. That's just one example. I don't know what...
So what do you make it mean about you that he is disagreeing with you?
I don't know. Like, I'm okay with disagreeing, but I feel like I'm the one that always has to give in. Like, that it always ends up having to be his way.
Okay.
And I mean, he even said that. He's like, well, I apologize. He's like, I can't change, and I'm never going to change. And I feel like, you know, I'm always making you compromise, or, you know, making you give in. And I'm like, I don't even know what to say to that. Because okay. I do feel like I'm the one that always has to get.
What's the problem with that?
In many ways, I feel like I can't. Like, he doesn't respect my feelings either. Like,
okay.
Like, I feel that often. Like, I'm trying to respect his, and yet, like, because he's never willing to meet in the middle, that I feel, you know, like, many times I'm walking on eggshells just to do his thing. I mean, moving in and unpacking and stuff, you know, we both work full time outside of the house. We have two kids, and there were so many nights I didn't want to unpack one more box. I was just exhausted. And yet I did it because I knew he wanted it done. And I knew that it would feel better having our house feel more like a house, but it just, like, I don't think he realizes how much I end up catering to his wishes.
Okay. So this is very interesting to me. You've used a lot of words like never, very declarative. He doesn't respect me. Okay. And I want to ask you, if you look at that sentence by itself, he doesn't respect me. Is that the truth? Or is that just something that you're telling yourself because of this situation? Does he respect you as a person?
Yeah.
Okay.
He does.
So I want you to watch how your brain is going here. Okay. What I see here is you are trying to make him happy. You're trying to please him. You know, that box that you didn't want to do, you wanted to make him happy. You wanted him to see that you were doing something for him so that you could feel good about yourself. That's called people pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
He can't make you feel good about yourself. He's not doing a very good job at this, right?
Right.
You have to do that for yourself. Are you going to, have you been to the 2-day? You've been to the 2-day, right?
Yeah.
Have you heard Corinne coach on husbands before? And
yeah.
What she always says, are you going to stay with him?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you're going to stay with him, then you have to work on how you can accept him 100% and accept all there is about him, all the wonderful, all the amazing, all the not so amazing.
Right.
You get to label all that because, you know, you have a thought in your mind about him. But you have to take ownership of your own happiness and your own feelings of respected and not give him all the authority over them. Mm-hmm. Okay? So if you put respected in the model on the feelings line,
yeah,
you have a thought that creates the feeling. What your thought is right now is, he doesn't respect me. So you feel disrespected. What if your thought was, he respects me 100%? Then you would feel respected. See, you're giving him the authority over you about whether or not you feel respected.
Right.
Whereas you could create your own thoughts. I show up every day and I know, mm-hmm. you know, I love myself. I do these things because I love mm-hmm. him. I am service oriented. That's self-respect. And that's what you need to go for there. Okay. Yeah.
And like, I've kind of taken, like, I think some steps towards that, like, mm-hmm. especially where our work schedules kind of don't overlap. So I'm home with the kids on the weekends, mm-hmm. especially holiday weekends, especially in the summer. He works for the Metro Parks. And that's where everybody goes to recreate, and therefore my husband has to work. So I've taken steps to make plans and do things for me. And that's one of the things that he's like kind of complaining that we're too busy. We have too many things going on. He can't handle it. And I said, well, I do those things for me, not mm-hmm. just the kids. Mm-hmm. Like, it's for me. Like, you might be working. I'm not going to just sit home and watch everybody else have fun. Get depressed about that. I've taken steps for us. And then his next comments are, I know my job's making you miserable, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that's not what I said at all. Like, I never said, you know, I don't like it that you're here. And he's like, yeah. And then you have to go places as a single mom. And I'm like, I never complained about doing it by myself. So like, how do I respond when he's...
Sounds like he has a lot of thoughts.
I know he's reading to what I'm saying. Like, I don't know how to respond to that either. You know, where I'm trying to be as like clear and upfront as I can be. Mm-hmm. And he's reading into it. And then I'm like, no, that's not what I'm saying at all.
Yeah. He gets, you know, he has his own models running over here.
Right.
Right. I mean, he's got it, and it sounds like he has a lot of them. You have your models running over here. You can only affect your models. You're not going to be able to change his mind. You're not going to be able to change his thoughts. All you can do is be real declarative in how you speak to him mm-hmm. and allow him to decide how he's going to interpret it.
Right. I mean, and then not let it bother me.
Well, I mean,
yeah, I know. I know it shouldn't bother me.
I don't know that it shouldn't bother you, but you can have some awareness around how he's feeling. You can, you know, and you can choose what you're going to do in response or not do in response to that awareness. All that is within your model. Mm-hmm. All that is within your control, right? But if you're going to stay with him, and you're going to, you know, continue to deal with him on a daily basis, you have to keep your models clean and make sure that you are creating your own thoughts and feelings and not so much in reaction or in reflection to him. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah.
Because he's got all his models going on too. He could be, I wonder if we did his model, you know, if we just guessed at what his primary feeling on a day-to-day basis is. What do you think it is?
Overwhelm.
Yeah. Or insecure.
That too. Yeah.
Right. I think it's fascinating. If you were to sit down and do his model and think about where he's really coming from, it provides you some understanding that allows you to be, to let him be who he is. Mm-hmm. If he's overwhelmed and he's insecure and you love him, then you have some compassion for that. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
That's what I do a lot of times with my husband. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I see some of that in him as well. I mean, I guess we all do. I guess all of our husbands.
Sorry,
but we're always doing models on our husbands, right?
Yeah.
But that's part of the beautiful thing about this thought work is that you get to notice that you have all the control over yours and how you react, and zero control over his and how he reacts. It's mm-hmm. all about how you show up. Okay. So back to the original issue about it always has to be his way. How long have you been married?
12 years.
12 years. So for 12 years, things usually go his way. You're still married, right? Mm-hmm. You still love him. You could look at it as a frustration that things always have to go his way. You know, again, there's that word always. That's the absolute. I bet there's one or two times in 12 years that things went your way.
Yeah.
Could be wrong. Yeah. So watch the absolute. But if you use your servant's heart rather than your people pleasing, then you're giving from a place of love and you don't need the backfill of his happiness. You're creating your own. Because you're giving to him or you're giving to the family. The people-pleasing part is the part that gives and expects some kind of response in return. Mm-hmm. If you can cut that part off, then you're probably going to be more fulfilled. Mm-hmm. You know, don't look for a response. Just be that person who gives and has the joy of the giving. It's just like Christmas. How much fun is it to give your, I just saw a daughter, right? To give your daughter
a gift.
And just to see it under the tree and know that you gave her that gift. You'd love for her to love it, but she doesn't have to. But you shopped for it and you created it and you wrapped it. And that's just all you're doing for him is you're giving him a gift. And you don't have to have his response to create the happiness if you focus on the fact that you've given the gift and you feel fulfilled from that point. Just because you were the servant in that. The servant, you had the servant's heart.
Okay.
Does that help at all?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm doing a lot of talking here.
No, it helps. Yep. I really like the idea of kind of going through models, trying to think how he thinks. And just because I know we think differently, but I think it would help. And maybe when we're both less stressed, I can bring up the idea of the modeling because, you know, he likes to do his thing. And I think that, yeah. You know, I've encouraged him, like, try to find some type of podcast that would help with your overwhelm or whatever. But and I've talked about how I feel better after being, you know, part of P&P and it opened my eyes to other podcast as well. So, yeah, but I know
also it's like teach him, I'd also teach him a little bit about overwhelm
mm-hmm.
and about how when you really indulge in a feeling of overwhelm, you pretty much stall any action.
Yeah.
You just kind of swim in overwhelm. And so you might help him understand that just one small step toward whatever it is he wants to do, one little action kind of takes you out of overwhelm and sets you moving forward.
Right.
I don't know if he would, you know, you might just sometime when he seems receptive, you might just overwhelm to him.
Yeah.
We see it a lot in the tribe, especially with some of the new people who come in and see No BS and all the bonus courses and the Facebook group and the this and the that. And, you know, we have to tell them it's not, you know, you don't have to do everything.
Right.
You know, just do one thing. And that kind of, that helps.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. See you later.
Bye.
Bye. Christina, You're next.
Can you hear me?
Yes. How are you?
Great. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good.
Okay, so I have questions about, I'm looking at my notes, planning realistically versus like my future self planning.
Okay.
I looked at my habit tracker online and I got my little stats for you. So my planning is an assessment is 100%. I've done 113 days of plans. I wouldn't say realistic, but of plans and assessments. But in the last month, I've only followed my plan 50%, 51%. Okay. And my overeating is also an issue where I'm going past my plus two. I'm successful 63% of the time.
Okay.
So, help me.
So when 51% of following the plan, does that mean you eat foods that you have not planned?
Yeah. I'm some of it are off plan eats and some of it are, my overeats I consider is not following.
So why are you not planning what you are eating off plan?
Some of it is, a combination, and I just started doing my recovery worksheets. That was my level up, by the way.
Good.
So I only have a few, but I think a lot of it are plan changes. So, you know, the other day I was supposed to go on a date and it didn't work out. So I just had a different meal that was somewhat equivalent, but not what I had planned. So some of it is that. Other things are the whole, you know, I just wanted it. It was there.
Okay. Those are the ones to watch for.
Right.
If, like, Ken and I are supposed to go out to eat tonight. If that falls through and I eat at home and I eat something, you know, on my regular protocol that, you know, isn't a jackass eat, I'm going to call that on plan.
Okay.
I mean, I just, if I'm swapping fuel food for fuel food, then I'm okay with that being on plan. This morning, oh my gosh, I was fixing eggs and bacon for my breakfast. That was my plan, either eggs or oatmeal plus bacon. So I decided on the eggs. I cracked the eggs. I cracked one egg into the pan, had two yolks. I thought, well, that's weird.
Mm-hmm.
I cracked the second egg in the pan. I swear to God, two more yolks.
Wow.
Two eggs, four yolks. One of the yolks looked brown to me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I thought, I wonder if I should eat that. So I'm cooking up my eggs. I kind of move that yolk over to the side, cut it out. Long story short, I ate about half my eggs because I was kind of weird about them and decided to sub in a banana.
Okay.
I'm calling that on plan. All right. Because those eggs didn't work out. They were weird.
Okay. Right.
So that kind of thing is okay. I would, if I had subbed in ice cream, that would not have been okay.
Right.
All right. So if you're staying, you know, the same level or you're leveling up, you know, you can give yourself the grace to call that on plan.
Okay.
It's when you sub in the ice cream instead of the banana or you eat, you know, you way overeat that you need to go back and look at. So, or if you're eating a snack that you didn't plan, you know, you want to go back and figure out why am I not planning these things? Is it diet mentality? Is it, you know, why would you not plan realistically for the next day? Okay.
See, I think that it's a combination of those. And I've talked to my accountability group about it. And I think I'm having these issues where I feel like I'm planning realistically, but then I think I'm having the conversations with myself that I'm supposed to be having, basically, where I'm planning realistically and it might be too realistic. And I'm just like, this is not what my future self needs to be eating.
Right. So, does your future self eat behind her own back?
No.
He
does not only eat 51% of the time.
Right.
So I think I just, I'm struggling and I, you know, the scale's not really going down as much as I would like it to be.
Yeah. Cause you're eating behind your own back.
Exactly. And so I'm need to figure out where I need to level up. Is it the two, like eating to the plus two right now? Is it focusing, you know, redoing my protocol and redoing my plan? But yeah, my brain is battling between this is realistic for me and this is what my future self needs to be eating.
And I would tell you it's a combination of the two.
Okay.
Okay. You need to plan realistically.
Okay.
And whatever's on that plan, you eat to a two.
Okay.
Don't overcomplicate it. Look, this is my favorite post-it note ever. Can you read that? I refuse to complicate this, right? I keep it right here on my monitor. It's just that easy, okay? You create a realistic plan. We don't care what's on it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you could have McDonald's three times a day. And then you eat what's on the plan to a two.
Okay.
All right. So you dovetail both of them. All right. Mm-hmm. If you have to pick one because you can't dovetail both of them in the beginning, then you realistically plan. All right.
Okay.
You stop eating off plan and then you layer in the overeating as well.
I think that that's what I was kind of not sure where I really wanted to focus on this month on. Is it the plus two or the realistic planning? And I just don't want to lie to myself or don't, you know, I feel like I'm being realistic. And then for some reason, it just doesn't work out that way.
And you probably have a bunch of diet rules in your head.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, like you said, my future self doesn't eat this way, but what about today's self? What about today's self that's learning to stay on plan, right? Mm-hmm. Future self may not eat that way, and that's fine. We'll leave that to her because we're going to grow into her. But right now, you meet yourself where you are, and that is you have to create a plan that you're going to follow.
Okay.
Okay. So what was I going to say? Anyway, I don't remember. I had something really smart, I'm sure. So drop the diet rules right now. Oh, I know what it was. You're going to realistically plan. You're going to put all the foods on for a couple of weeks, a month, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to eat all the foods, whatever it is you want that's on the plan. Eventually, you're going to assess on the weekends and you're going to say, I'm not losing any weight. What do I need to level up? Oh, now's the time. I layer in the plus two because that's going to help me level up and help move the needle on the scale.
Okay.
Okay.
I got it.
All right. Is that all you need?
That's all.
All right. Thanks so much.
I appreciate your help.
All right. Bye. Carrie Ann, you're next.
Kathy, can you see me?
I cannot. Let's see if that helps. Oh, there you are. Hello.
Hello. Hi.
What's up?
Can you hear me okay? Okay. So I am an April baby who got her act together in June.
Mm-hmm.
I've been regularly planning since June, and then the gift of fat has really changed things tremendously for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, in June, I focused on my, four basics and I really honed in on the two and two.
Okay.
So, and the water. But overall, I feel like I have most of them down pretty clearly,
mm-hmm.
But my two and two is, my tendency is to eat, sorry, I'm trying to get to where I'm not too much in the sun. My tendency is to eat, at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon is my first meal. I'm not hungry before then. I'm awake at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning for work.
Wow. Okay.
I do make sure that I drink half of my water allotment a day, and I do about a gallon a day, but usually about 120 ounces, a day before I eat. I'll drink half of that or almost half of that, about 50 ounces, if not 60 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm genuinely just not hungry. Once in a while, I'll feel like a rumble. And if I really think about it, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
So my dilemma is I eat at two. And then my meal, I do pretty well with eating to my two,
mm-hmm.
and, have a good idea of what my cue is. You know, like I sigh, get a little frowny face, like, okay, it's over. And then I move on.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm noticing that I'm not hungry for dinner or another meal, usually until like 8 o'clock at night. Okay. And sometimes I'm prepared, sometimes I'm not. So what will end up happening is I will eat again, usually at my 1 or 1.5, rather than eating at a 2. Or I've been noticing also that I will finish my first meal probably more at a 1 or 1.5 rather than an actual 2. I don't know if I'm being overthinking it, which probably, or if I'm not trying to game the system, that's really important to me. Mm-hmm. But I'm really trying to find, like, if I eat at 9 o'clock at night, 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, that's way too late for me, because by the time I go to bed, I had gastric bypass surgery in 2003. So if I eat that soon before I go to bed, I end up aspirating in the middle of the night, yeah, or I get sick, get indigestion. It's just not good for me.
Right.
So I'm wondering, what do I do?
Okay.
Like,
I have a couple of suggestions, okay, for you to try. What are you eating at your 2 o'clock meal?
Typically, nothing consistent. Usually like a protein and sometimes rice, vegetable. It's pretty, If we go out, I'll eat like half of a sandwich, mm-hmm, and a few other things. I'm not eating a lot, and that's kind of where my worry for the second meal is.
Why are you worried about the second meal?
Oh my gosh. I don't know, because, you know, what if I'm starving the next morning? But I have not woken up and starved.
No.
So.
We might set that aside and come back to it.
Okay.
Is there a way you can lighten up the first meal?
Lighten it up?
Yeah. Are you sure it's a +2 you're eating to and not a +3? The reason I ask is, you know, 6 hours is a long time. A meal eaten to +2 should, you know, you should be hungry again in about 4 hours.
I'm pretty sure.
Or is it all the water?
I'm pretty sure that I am.
Okay.
I am drinking a lot of water after. Mm-hmm. I can't drink with my meals or within an hour after them, because I will, just because of the surgery, I will.
Right.
So I'm pretty sure I am, because if I overeat, even, mm-hmm, to like a +3, +4, my body does this weird thing where I'll kind of earth up the extra food,
yeah,
and purge it if I eat too much. So, and I'm not uncomfortable at all. I feel pretty satisfied. I'm pretty content with what, okay, I'm feeling.
So this is kind of where you just look at the food that you're eating that's keeping you satisfied for 6 hours and figure out how you can lighten it up. If you're eating 4 ounces of protein, for instance, roughly, you might back that off to about 3 ounces of protein. Do you put a lot of fat in your meal?
Probably.
Yeah, you can back off the fat a little bit, because fat will keep you fuller longer. We tell people to add fat who want to stay fuller longer. You want to get hungry sooner, so you might back off a little bit of the fat, right?
Okay.
Rice keeps me full for a long time. Mm-hmm. Maybe swap out the rice for potatoes or something else. You know, rice kind of swells, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Just try some different things in that arena to so that your food is it's so strange, is less satisfying. You know, keeps so your body burns through it faster. Okay.
Okay.
Protein.
Your body. For the first meal.
Yeah. See if you can eat a little bit lighter and see if that helps. I hate to tell you to drink less water. I just don't think that's
it. The water has had such a tremendous effect on my life. I'm hesitant to stop that.
No, I don't want you to drink less water, but can you create a time between like 12 and 2 where you don't drink any water? Like drink your first 50 or 60.
Before.
Yeah. And give yourself time to get hungry.
Does that
make sense? Kind of see if you can, if you can monkey around with your water schedule a little bit, keep drinking the water, but push it further away from the mealtime, maybe.
Okay. I can do that.
Things like that. Those are some of the things I'd try.
Okay. And then, water. One more question. Mm-hmm. Is say for instance, I do eat, cause you know, sometimes we'll go out, like today we're going to go out and take my mother-in-law out for her birthday. Mm-hmm. So I'll end up eating lunch with them. Chances are I won't hit my 1 or 2 until late tonight. Now, if I just go to bed and I'm a little hungry or I drink mm-hmm. water and I can, mm-hmm. I know that I can drink water and it'll go away for at least a while. Yeah. And I'll go to bed a little bit empty. Mm-hmm. We're good. Mm-hmm. I'm not, it's fine. Like, I can't believe I'm asking whether or not I should be eating. And I know Corinne was like, you're not going to starve to death. You know, no, you're not.
You're going to be fine. Your body will self-regulate. It'll know that you're sleeping and it'll tap into your fat stores. That's why you can go to bed a little bit hungry and be okay. And your body actually, you'll wake up and you probably won't be hungry because your body has dined in. I love that term, dining in, air quotes, right? Because your body has dined in and kept itself satisfied. So that's fine to do. When you go out to lunch today, lighten up the lunch. You don't have to eat a full lunch. You can eat just a
little. I usually don't. I will get the lunch. Mm-hmm. I will break it up immediately into half because mm-hmm. I know that my body can't. And if I don't do it right then, I will end up picking at it. Mm-hmm. So I've done that pretty consistently recently. Sorry, I have to start my car. I've done that. You might have lost me.
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I've done that pretty consistently since the beginning of June, where whatever's put on my plate, it's instantly halved. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I won't even eat that full amount because I've hit my 2. Yeah. So yeah,
and through all this, like you're still losing weight, right? Through all this, you're still losing weight. Yeah. I don't see that you're, I mean, I think you're doing great. I think the questions you're asking are really insightful. You're just trying to figure it out. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect. Thank you.
Cool.
That's you're all very I welcome. Got today.
All right.
Have a good afternoon.
You too. See ya.
Bye.
Bye. M. Burns. You're next. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. So I posted this morning on Facebook. I have been a Tribe member since September. Uh-huh. Actually started listening last summer and have not lost any weight.
Okay.
Have maintained and actually have gained from spring break, which I'm still struggling to lose.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't even know how to organize my thoughts to talk to you because I feel like there's just so much going on. And I just listened to the lady, the young girl, two guests, I guess, before about realistic planning. Mm-hmm. I think I plan pretty well. I think I'm pretty active. I don't know. I don't know where to start. Part of me just wants to start over.
All right. Well, tell me where you are with your four basics. Let's start there. How are you doing with your water?
Love water. Drink a ton of it.
Like more than 64 ounces a day?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't have a problem with that.
All right.
The 2 to 2, I'm not going to say I'm perfect with that. I do try. Sleep is going good. Since I've been doing this so long, my habit of planning has also, you know, it's part of me now. It's like a ritual. You know, I get up and I do my planning.
You do a 24-hour plan every day?
Every day.
Do you assess them?
I don't. And that's what I was just thinking about. I'm not as good as assessing. Sometimes I'll just take a highlighter and highlight things, you know, that I want to go back and look at. I want to level up or maybe, you know, patterns that I've had that I need to work on.
Mm-hmm. Are you doing recovery worksheets when you overeat?
I am. I would have to say like 80% of the time.
Okay.
So I'm pretty good.
This is why you can't tell me, you don't know where to start.
Okay.
You're not consistently assessing. you're not perfect, but you're sort of okay with 2-2. You don't really know, which means you probably aren't real good with 2-2.
Right. Yeah.
Sometimes you do recovery worksheets and sometimes you don't. You have to get really good about collecting your data in order to see the patterns in order to move forward in your weight loss, right? Mm-hmm. That's why the four basics are so stinking important. I mean, seriously, that's why they are. So great that you're creating your 24-hour plans every day. About how much of the time do you think you're following them?
Well, I'd have to say not as much as I like. I'm good. I usually, what I've learned is I usually break on Wednesday or Thursday. Mm-hmm. Like I can be really good Wednesday, Thursday. I don't want to follow the dinner plan. Like I want to drink. I want to go out. Like I'm just tired of cooking and doing dishes. Okay. That makes sense. Like, bye. So, yeah.
So why aren't you planning a night out on Wednesday?
So I need to do that. And I've tried,
but why aren't you?
Yeah. Sometimes I do. And sometimes I don't, okay. But you're right. Yeah.
And the reason I'm asking you why you aren't is because you're probably in your brain going, I shouldn't because I won't lose weight.
I think so. And right? I think, you know, it goes back to what a lot of the people have said throughout the different conversations is like, you're still stuck on diet mentality. Like, even though you don't want to be, you are, you know, like your brain is like, no, you don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. Even though you do.
Corinne is so good at explaining why realistic planning is so important. You know, because it flies in the face of diet mentality. What do you mean I should plan what I'm actually going to eat? I should plan, you know, chicken and broccoli 3 times a day.
Right.
Right? That's how I'm going to lose weight. Except the problem is that you're not eating chicken and broccoli. You can plan it all day long, but if you're not eating it, it doesn't matter, right?
Right.
You planned,
right.
You know, salmon and potatoes. If you're not eating it, it doesn't matter. So you have to practice being intentional with writing down what you're going to eat. And then what happens over time is it evolves into what, you know, the leveled up foods and what creates more of a, you know, a good protocol, foods that you find the foods that feel good to you. It creates more of a chicken and broccoli experience, basically.
Right.
Okay. But you can't start there because you're not going to do that. That's, you know, it's like saying, I'm going to, where did I hear this analogy? I don't know if it was on a podcast or if it was Corinne. It's like saying, is your first name Melissa?
It is, yes.
Okay, Melissa. It's like saying, Melissa, I'm going to go run a marathon tomorrow. All right? I'm going to put it on my plan. I'm running a marathon, right? I haven't run in like a year, period. Right. All right? I've never run a marathon. I've trained for 3 half marathons, but not in like 3 years, okay? But I'm going to run a marathon tomorrow. I'm going to put it on my plan. That's what you're doing, right? When you're not realistically planning, you're saying, I'm going to run a marathon tomorrow. Instead of saying, I think I'm going to go out and I'm going to try and run 2-2 intervals for 2 miles. That's probably more realistic for me. Maybe not. I don't know. Walking 3 miles is very realistic for me. I can tell myself I'm going to do that tomorrow. Running a marathon, not so much.
Right.
But when you guys don't realistically plan, it's like you're telling yourself you're going to run a marathon every day. Okay? So for you, let's think about today. Have you had lunch today?
I have not.
Okay. What are you going to eat for lunch?
So I put on my plan.
I don't want to know what's on your plan.
Okay.
I'm going to eat for lunch.
Oh, okay. So that's funny. I saw that.
Right?
So I have a salad. I usually have salad for lunch every day, or I said half of a sandwich with some, with some fruit. So that's.
And is that enough for your lunch? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. So that would be on your realistic plan, salad or half a sandwich. Okay. Are you going to have a snack this afternoon?
Yes. I'm going to the movies with my kids and I did put popcorn on there.
Okay.
And I'm going to bring my own bag and kind of fill it up and try to, I know. Now I'm saying try, right? Okay. I'm going to listen to my cues and feel the two and stop at the two.
Okay. And then what's dinner?
Dinner, we have hamburgers.
Hamburgers. Okay. What's going with the hamburgers?
Um, I, Nothing. I don't.
You're just going to have a hamburger. No bun.
Oh, a hamburger. No, and I usually have a salad and I have fries on there as well.
Okay.
We have potato fries and then I make a big salad for dinner too.
Okay. So that plan, are you going to have any dessert? Any drinks?
No, not tonight. But I did put on there 2 to 3 drinks because it is Saturday night. And even though initially when I wrote my plan, I didn't put it, but then, you know, I adjusted it later in the morning because I'm like, you know, Saturday, the neighbors come over, people come over. I'm going to put.
Okay, if you do decide to have a drink, you're still on plan.
Okay.
Right? So if that is realistic for you, if that's, is what you told me what you put on your plan?
Yes.
Okay. So then you should be able to follow that for the rest of the day because you've decided ahead of time and it's realistic. Right?
Right.
So you're not running a marathon today?
No, okay. No, not today.
But that's the mentality that you go into it with. You let the French fries go on the plan. You let the popcorn go on the plan. You tell yourself ahead of time how much popcorn you're going to eat. You know, I'm taking a bag. I'm not going to eat more than this and I'm going to evaluate. You know, that's how you do all that. That eventually, consistently done, realistically, gives you the data you need to know what you need to level up on. It might be nothing. You might lose a pound a week doing those things and eating to your two. But if you don't, then you know, then you have the data to go back and figure out, where was I not realistic? Where did I eat behind my own back? Where did I overeat and why? Because you've done your recovery worksheets, which are not that hard. I have a stack of them over there myself. I did a recovery worksheet last week on a banana, okay? I just did it. You've got all your data and you can go back and you can figure out why, all right?
Okay.
Without the beat down, without, I don't know if you've been on the call and heard all about the self-judgment, but without, without the beat down, because all that is unnecessary. The beat down is unnecessary and it's actually a barrier to you looking at things with the perspective of learning from them.
Okay.
If you stay in beat down, you're not learning. You're just beating down. It's like you get to pick, which do I want to do? I want to verbally mentally beat myself up, or do I want to up level my thinking here? Right?
Right. And definitely, you know, and I think it's funny. It's taken me a year to realize, like, you're right. My plans aren't realistic all the time. You know, when I'm 43, it's like, I should know, you know, like,
oh, there's that should word.
Well, right. I made a comment on that. I should. Yeah. I know.
What if it was supposed to take a year?
Yeah.
What if you found it, figured this out at exactly the right time for you to be able to implement it?
Then I would be so grateful. And
you get to decide now is the right time though. It's so amazing how we can be so intentional with what we decide to think that we, you know, it's like freeing. All right, Melissa, today you get to decide that it's the perfect day to learn about the realistic plan. Even though you've been in the tribe for a year, it's okay because today was the day. It's the one.
Right.
Or you can say, I should have learned this a year ago. And live in that space. That feels terrible.
Right. It does. It feels really heavy, you know, and I think when I realized it, you know, because I guess I've always been giving myself kudos, like, it's okay. Every day is a new day. Like, let's keep going. And someone had posted something about weight loss and Corinne made a comment, like, why is it taking you so long to lose weight? And like, it was in a nice way. I mean, you have to read the comment and it kind of like hurt my chest because I'm like, oh my gosh, that's me. I'm that person, you know? Mm-hmm. So
there's the podcast on Saturday that we dropped had such a great journaling question. It was the 20 reasons you weigh what you weigh today. Okay. And it's actually 20 reasons that you write down, you know, in your journal that here's the 20 reasons I weigh what I weigh today. Most people are going to write down about half that are positive and about half that need to be worked on. But basically what it provides you is a blueprint for what you need to work on. So for you, number one might be, I don't plan realistically.
Right.
Number two might be, but I always plan my snacks. Number three might be something else. See, it gives you that blueprint of things to move forward with to, you know, I'm going to pick this one today and I'm going to work on this one and figure this one out and layer it into my program.
Okay. That's a good, I need to do that.
Yeah. It's such a good thing to do. 20 reasons you weigh what you weigh today. This is to be done without self-judgment.
Okay.
No mental beatdowns allowed.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to create a roadmap for your own success, then it doesn't need to be filled with, I've been here a year. I can't believe I haven't figured this out. Because that's not
right. It hurts to say that. Right. Yeah.
And when you're in that model with hurt in the feeling line, you're not creating a lot of good actions to move forward.
Right.
Right.
So true. So true. Because then you go, oh, I'm here. I never lose weight. And why do I try anymore? Mm-hmm. You know?
So maybe your model today is that thought is, I'm learning how to plan realistically. This is my first step. And the feeling is aware. Okay.
Then the I like
action,
that.
Yeah. Then the actions you create because you are now aware are not full of judgment. They're like, right, I think about what I'm going to put on my plan. I think about what I'm really going to eat. I write down what I'm really going to eat. And then I assess at the end of the day to see how close I got. And I use that assessment to create awareness for the next day.
Okay.
Right?
Exactly. Exactly.
If I could wave my magic wand and take away all the tribe's mental beatdowns, can you imagine how much weight everyone would lose?
We'd be running marathons and skinny people.
Right?
Super skinny.
Because yeah. That's where everybody gets stuck. They get stuck with this word should. I should be doing this, or I should have done that, or I should be here now. And when you're stuck in that world, you're not doing anything to move forward.
Right. Right. And I mean that the word awareness, I feel it. So I think that'll be more powerful when I'm in my thoughts and I'm like, what am I aware of?
Yeah.
So, okay. I'll give it, I'll talk to you soon. Okay. I'm going to work on this.
Good. Good.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Right. See you.
Have a good one. Bye.
All right. WM Van. Let's see who you are.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I can't see you. Let's see if that helps. Oh, here you come. There you are. Hi. Tell me your name.
Hey, Wendy.
Wendy. Hi, Wendy. What's up?
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Excellent. Thanks. I am just having some issues planning because I work 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. I'm a nurse.
Okay.
So that's just that part of it, because I'm awake in the morning, mm-hmm. the night that I work, so mm-hmm. get up regular, do all regular things, and then I usually nap mm-hmm. between 3:30 and 5-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Don't always eat before I go in, but sometimes I do, and that's easy to plan. But then I'm up for the whole night, so I'm just wondering what kind of tips. I'm sure you have other nurses that you have.
Yeah, this is actually a great question for the Facebook group.
Okay.
We have a lot of shift workers. You can even tag Christy Stewart. She's a seven. She's a nighttime shift person. I've coached her on eating 2 to 2 during her shift work, and she likely knows others as well. Tell me what your day looks like when you're, how many days a week do you work this shift? Probably three.
I work 3 days, 1 week, 2 days, the next.
Okay.
So I have a lot of days off in between words.
Okay. So on the day you're going to work, you get up normal time and I would go ahead. What I would do is I would go ahead and write everything I was going to eat that day. So you probably have breakfast, you probably have lunch,
yep.
then you take your nap.
Yep.
Then you might have dinner, right?
Right.
whatever you plan for dinner, if you don't eat it, can you take it with you to work for when you get hungry?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
So
and then I have snacks, and what I have been doing is eating my snacks that I plan for that day on the overnight. So like yogurt with sunflower seeds, hummus and carrot, right? Because generally we're busy and I don't necessarily have time to like sit down and really, really eat anyway. And they're all portion controlled. But then what I find is I'm eating more the next day. So I feel like I maybe need to be eating more on that overnight.
Why are you eating more the next day?
I'm just hungrier. Like I don't eat what I would normally eat so on my normal shift, days when I don't go to work.
On a 12-hour shift, you don't have a dinner break?
Well, ideally, sure, but it doesn't always happen.
Okay.
It just depends on how busy we are. And
okay.
I work in an ICU, so it's not always predictable.
So you're hungrier. When do you sleep?
The day after.
When do you sleep?
I sleep. I'm usually home by 7:30, 8 o'clock. And then I probably wake up at 2 or 3. So anywhere between 6 and 7 hours.
Okay.
And then I get up at 3. And then I literally, like, so I have stuff planned. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I'm like eating all the things that I planned for that day in from whatever 3:30 until 8, where normally I would probably not eat all that food. Like on a normal day, I literally don't usually eat breakfast because I'm just not hungry. I drink.
So why not
try planning and then dinner?
Why not try planning instead of a bunch of snacks from 3 to 8, plan meals. Like you get up and you have a meal. Whatever that
is. I do. Oh, I do. But I eat everything on my plan. Like I'll wake up at 3 and I'll have.
Are you drinking any water?
I wake up. Yes. Yep.
So why are you eating all this stuff? You can't, I mean, are you sure it's physical hunger?
Maybe not. Cause I try to drink a glass of water before I eat, like that on the clock thing. Mm-hmm. That I saw, I can't remember if somebody talked about that on the clock thing. Yeah. That's what I try to do before I eat because I feel like the day after, unless I'm working 3 in a row, then I'm just awake and sleep and it's fine. But my off days, like after working when I don't have to go back to work, those are the days that I'm eating way too much. And I shouldn't say I'm eating way too much. I'm just eating more than I normally eat on a day when I haven't worked the night before. And you're probably right. I'm probably not hungry, but
I'm wondering if it's your decompress transition eating.
Oh.
You're coming off these shifts and now you have a few days off.
Yep.
And that's how you're decompressing rather than, it can't be physical hunger if it only happens then.
You're probably, I feel like that's, now that you say that, I totally feel it. Because I've heard you guys coach people on like that 4 o'clock, whatever. And I just, I'm always like, oh, I'm so lucky I don't have that.
Oh, but you do, right?
But I do. Yeah, I totally do. Okay. All right. So that's it. So then I'm going to try and do a pattern interrupt for those.
Yeah. Find a different way to decompress.
Okay.
I can tell you after... Of course, this is just me, and circumstances are different, but I can give you an example of how I figured this out for myself.
Mm-hmm.
When I worked my other job, I would get up early, drive through traffic to get to work, work all day, drive through traffic to get home. And when I was home, when I walked in the door, I was like this, you know, just all tensed up from working all day and sitting in traffic and angry and da da da. That's when I would exercise. I burned off all that anger, all that frustration, and it transitioned me into home life. Okay.
So did you go to the gym?
Sometimes I went to the gym. Sometimes I met my husband at the park for a walk. Sometimes I come home and do a video. It didn't matter.
Okay.
But I knew that that's how I could decompress without eating or without yelling or without doing something stupid.
right, yeah.
Okay. Find that thing that allows you to transition from the shift work home time because you're also, your biorhythms are a little bit confused because you've been up at night, right? Yep. So your body is trying to self-regulate And it thinks, it's your primal brain thinks, oh, to self-regulate, we need to eat. You know, totally. we're under stress. We need to eat. So find something else other to set you straight, to transition okay. you into the next 4 days of different sleep patterns, different eat patterns.
Yeah. And usually the next day I'm totally fine. So I think you're absolutely right. I think. And when you said it, I felt like ding, ding, ding. That was it. The decompression. Yeah. That's gotta be it. Cause that just sounds so, and that Christy Stewart, is she with a CH or a K or with a K?
CHRISTY.
Okay. Okay, perfect. I'm going to see if I can.
Somebody in the chat says Heidi Burns posted about this today. She's a night nurse. So you could just get into, you could get into that as well. I thought I had seen a post about that.
Perfect. Today. Yeah, I would love that. I just need to have, and would love to find an accountability people too that I could tap into. So awesome. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. We see that pretty often. There's a lot of shift, people.
Yeah, it's literally, it's not hard, which I kind of was dreading, but I think it's not the planning part. I think it's the decompression part.
Could be.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. See you later.
Have a good day. Yep.
All right. Bye. You too. Bye-bye. Judith, you're next. I'm not sure what's going on.
There we go. Hi.
Hi. Oh, there you are. Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Somebody is trying to log in as me here. This is weird. Okay. What's up?
Hard enough. We need to figure that out. So I'm like,
Okay. Maybe I clicked something funny. So what's up, Judith?
So, okay, I got so much from the earlier calls. I realized I've not been making realistic plans at all, like not even close. I did notice a pattern, which is why I jumped on the call this morning, because I will have 7 days of planning.
Mm-hmm.
3 are actually where I eat on plan and I eat on call, and 4 where I'll have like, because I was trying to do no sugar, no flour. I've been trying to for a long time unsuccessfully.
Okay.
And I'll end up eating like pita bread or a piece of French bread. So that's technically not on my plan. So then it's like 4 days out of the week are off plan. Mm-hmm. And then after 7 days of consistent planning, it's like my brain's like, fuck it. Just fuck this. Pardon my language. So
you can say it.
Okay. just that's where I go. And I was praying this morning and I was kind of looking at my like morning devotional and I was like, okay, I've been living in the past. Like I'm trying to recreate my protocol from 2.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to like get to that place again where I was 60 pounds down and I've just been beating myself up so horribly.
Yeah. You're trying to run the marathon. Right?
Yep.
Instead of meeting yourself where you are today and working up, instead of starting with intervals and shorter distance.
It's like, I like, not even, I'm like, want to go to the Olympics without a coach.
Right? I love that. So why not do this? If you want to be no sugar, no flour, why not create a protocol that allows a little bit of sugar and flour periodically, if you want to work that direction?
I think I didn't even think that was a possibility. It's so funny.
Well, it's okay. That's because you're thinking all or nothing. I'm either no sugar, no flour, or I'm like eating all the things. Right?
Literally. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why don't you sit down today and think about all the things you want to have on your protocol, right? Okay. You know, all the no sugar, no flour things. And then make a list of the things that have sugar and flour that for now you want to allow yourself as you're beginning your weight loss journey.
I love that.
That's like meeting yourself where you are, right? So you could put pita bread on your protocol. Then it doesn't become taboo. Then you can plan it, right?
Right.
And you can decide, you know, I'm going to have pita bread once or twice a week.
Yeah.
I did this very thing. This is so funny that you bring this up, because when the team a couple of years ago went to life coach school to the Stop Overeating Masterclass, I don't know if you've heard this story. It's where we first learned about no sugar, no flour. It was about 3 years ago now, maybe four. Betsy and Mary Jo had just joined the team, and it was me, Corinne, Betsy, Mary Jo, Coach Jane, at the time Coach Kathleen, six of us. We heard Brooke talk about no sugar, no flour. They were like all in. I'm like, I started crying. Seriously, I'm sitting in a hotel lobby going, I don't want to do that. I have to give up my Ritz crackers. I have to give up my peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and blah, 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 blah. So I told myself I'll do it for 2 weeks. That's it. That's all you get, 2 weeks. Months later, I was still doing it, right? But I was talking to Corinne one day, and I said, I really miss spaghetti. I miss spaghetti so much. And she goes, why don't you allow yourself spaghetti once a week? And I was like, ding. Oh, yeah, I get to do that. It's my protocol. So that's what I'm telling you. Write a protocol that you, a realistic protocol that you can live with, that you can create your realistic plans from.
I like that. I think, and the funny thing is, the first time Brooke introduced me to the idea of no sugar, no flour, I literally put my head on the table and cried. And we were on a video call at the time, and she's like, you know, we lost Judith. And I was just crying like, no, you can't take away my sugar and flour. Right. So I feel you. I totally feel you. And well, I think.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
No, go ahead. Ah. Go ahead.
I'm not going.
I realized, like, I think I've been trying to recreate that coaching program for myself here, as opposed to just embracing the PNP way of doing things. And then to add to that, I've been like, well, you can't get coaching because you've had enough coaching on weight loss. Right. I know how ridiculous it sounds when I say it out loud, but I think that's been in there too.
So, Brooke's program is very restrictive, right? If you don't want to live in restrictive world, then create a protocol that is more amenable to your lifestyle.
Yeah.
Apparently, you don't want to live in a restrictive world if for 3 days you get off plan and then 4 days, the other 4 days of the week, you know, you're not eating on plan. So I would totally do this. And girl, if there's a limit on the number of coaching you can get, I've like passed my limit a long time ago. Okay. Because every time I see Corinne, every time I podcast, I always say something and she goes, oh no, girl, we're going to coach on that. Like, wow.
And so funny, because I got certified and I would never tell a client like, oh, you've had enough. You've met your quota for today. Like,
right.
I'm turning off your Slack channel. You're done. Like, I would never say that to them ever in a million years. I wouldn't. Like, I don't think that way in terms of other people. But for myself, I can see how that I've been secretly thinking that, but not acknowledging it.
So what you're playing in your head is, I should know better. I should know this stuff. Yeah. I shouldn't need to be coached. Right? It's a should word.
Yeah.
Word that people aren't allowed to use on my calls. Right?
Notice how I avoided that very carefully.
Yes, you did. But what I'm telling you is, you know, and you know this, since you are a coach, you know this, you can't see your own stuff like someone who has clean space can see your stuff.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's why even coaches need coaches. I really, really believe that. Because I can get in my own muck and mire, and somebody else who has clean space and isn't in my, you know, dirty diaper with me can go, Kathy, you know, that's the thought, right? I'm like, oh yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've been trying to self-coach, but obviously like it's mostly like me berating myself and calling it coaching as opposed to actually self-coaching. So
oh my goodness.
Yeah, I'm so glad I jumped on the call this morning, because I was like, you know what? No, you can get help. This is ridiculous.
I'm glad you did too. Self-coaching in the mental beat down space isn't really good self-coaching, is it?
No.
No.
Not even close.
No. Work your models on that, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I needed this so badly. Thank you.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Create a good protocol now. I bet it frees up a lot of stuff for you.
Yeah. Oh, just a little piece of pita bread. I mean, like, really?
I can see it now. Your protocol is going to have a little piece of pita bread on it.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Carolyn, you're next.
Hello?
Hi, I can hear you. I can't see you. Let's see if this helps. There you are.
Hi, Kathy. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. So I'm a June baby. Mm-hmm. Still getting the hang of this all.
Cool.
I've noticed, though, that I am a stress binge eater.
Okay.
And also tagging on to the ladies before, I think it's part of my decompression as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not quite sure how to handle that. Sorry?
Oh, go ahead.
I'm making my 24-hour plans. I'm assessing mm-hmm. them. I'm doing all the recovery worksheets.
Mm-hmm.
I'm drinking my water. My sleep is crappy, though, for now. Okay. I'm trying to work on that.
Okay. So give me an example of when you binge eat due to stress. You know, take me back to what leads to the stress that leads to the eating.
So mainly it's normally work related. So I will get stressed out by my boss or my director, and I'll try to compartmentalize everything and, you know, kind of swallow it till I get home. And then it's just like a tornado rips through my kitchen. So okay. I kind of swallow my feelings.
Okay. So give me an example of what the boss does.
Unreasonable deadlines. And okay. I will say, I can't meet it. I'll be honest with him. And he goes, well, that's not an option. You have to meet it.
Okay.
Which leads into 13, 14 hour days.
Okay. Do you meet the deadlines?
I do.
All right. So they're not unreasonable.
They are for an 8 hour work day.
That's a thought.
Really? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You think it's a fact. Oh no, Kathy, I have to work 13 hours. I'm only supposed to work 8. It's a fact. They're unreasonable. Okay.
Okay.
What if I'm supposed to work 8 hours and I work 13 because I love it and I want to make my deadlines because I want to be proud of myself and accomplished? Does that mean I am also unreasonable?
I think that's also a thought, but I struggle to balance the home.
What I'm showing you is that only that you saying that his expectations or his deadlines are unreasonable is a thought. He has expectations. He's told you, I want you to get this finished in this amount of time. That's the fact. That's the only fact. You decide that it's unreasonable or that it's too much or that it's just fine or that I can do that. You decide what you think about his deadlines.
Okay. I think I need to do some work on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you see that? Your thought that it's unreasonable leads you to being stressed out. When you're stressed out, tell me what you do at work before you go home and binge. What do you do at work before you go home and binge when you're stressed out?
I just do the work until I've hit my limit.
Okay. Do you work well under stress, or do you complain about it for a little while and stew about it, go to the bathroom and cry? Talk to your coworkers. Do you do any of that stuff? Or do you just put your head down and go to work?
I think a little bit of that, but then I try to move past it and just try to get it done as fast as I can.
Okay. When you say that you push it down and push it down and push it down, what does that look like?
They have told me I am too blunt, too honest, and too opinionated. So I try to swallow it and not be that way, which is hard.
Okay. So what if you were to journal it, put it all down on paper rather than let it come out of your mouth? All the bluntness, all the directness, all the feelings, all the everything. What if you were to, instead of going to the coworkers and going, did you believe this jackass that we work for and blah, 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 blah. What if you were to just get out a pen and for 5 minutes go, I hate that guy. He's unreasonable. And start writing, 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 writing. And let it flow out your pen so that your brain clears up of all of it. And you can sit down and go to work without the stress. Because I guarantee you, working under stress is not as efficient work as it is working with a clean space, clean headspace. Right? Would you agree with that? I mean,
I agree.
That's my thought. Is it your thought?
Yes.
Right? Then, once you've gotten it all out and onto the paper, you can look at it and say how many facts are really there. And there's not going to be any. It's all going to be thoughts that lead to your feeling stressed. You know, you might write down, he wants this by 7 p.m., and that might be a fact. But you're going to see that you have a lot of thoughts, a lot. This is where the blunt and the direct, you know, stuff that you say that you're trying to push down actually gets out of your body. Okay?
Okay.
I think that's where I would focus for you. Then, how often does this happen? Daily? Weekly?
Weekly. Maybe once a week.
Once a week.
Normally towards the end of the end of the week.
All right. So put your binges on your plane. What do you binge on?
It's all depends on what's around, what's available.
All right. So let's say it's Oreos. You have a pack of Oreos and it's going to be, you know, if the boss ticks me off today, I'm going to eat the Oreos. What that does when you put it on your plan is it takes the binge eating out of the reactionary part of your brain and it puts it in the decision-making part. So you're not going in angry and mad and whatever, because you've journaled. You're going in saying, I have Oreos on my plan that I get to eat if I want them.
So how does that work with the -2 and +2? Because I feel like
When you're binging, you're not paying attention to +2, right?
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
But
so it doesn't work with -2 positive.
I'm guilty after that as well, though, too.
But planning the binges actually puts in a step in your brain that can tone the binges down or even after a certain period of time can stop them. Okay. Because it takes, do you know the two parts of your brain? Have you heard Corinne talk about them?
Yeah.
You've got back here, you've got the primal brain, which is very fight or flight reactionary. It's going to, it's always telling you, it's the one that's telling you we got to binge because we're stressed out. Because it's going to make you feel better, right? That's the reactionary part of your brain. That's the primal brain. The front part of your brain is the prefrontal cortex, which is very logical and decision-making. It's the one you plan with, okay? So if you put, all right, it's Thursday. My jackass boss is going to give me some unrealistic deadline, and I know he's going to tick me off. So just in case, I'm going to put this pack of Oreos on my, you know, whatever's in the pantry. I'm going to put that on my plan just in case. Then when you get home, after you've journaled and you've worked and you've done this stuff, you get to look at that pack of Oreos and see if you still want them because they're on the plan now. Okay. But that's all you get, right? This is the planned binge. You know, you don't get the Chips Ahoy, you get the Oreos, right? So it becomes a much more deliberate eat rather than a reactionary eat.
It's very interesting. I never would have thought of that.
Fascinating. Thank you. You will actually learn more about this in the Taking Control module, which you'll get in a couple of weeks. I think this next week you do module 3.
I finished 3. I'm moving into 4 for no BS, which what I'm working on right now.
Okay. Taking Control is number 5, and it's more about, we call this storm eating. It's more about the emotionally charged eating. And how to recognize it and how to work with it, how to decrease it, that kind of thing. So
I will look forward to that.
Pretty interesting stuff. Pretty interesting stuff. So that's what I do. I would definitely take a journal to work, or I don't care if you write on a piece of printer paper. When he ticks you off, I would write every ugly thing you have to say about him down on that piece of paper and get it out of your... Just picture, I always, when I'm journaling, I always picture the words coming out of my fingertips. And it feels like, and then, it sounds woo, but I swear I do this. I picture all the words jumbled up in my head, all the letters, like they look like little black letters that are all tangled up. And then I journal and I picture in my head, I picture open space. And that's the space that I get to decide what I'm thinking with, rather than all these thoughts that are all jumbled up in there that I'm not thinking intentionally. Is that too woo for you?
No, I like it a lot. It's just, I've never thought of journaling when I'm in that state, only because at work, I guess, again, this is a thought. I think people would think I'd be lazy because I'm not actually doing the actual work.
But if you take the 5 minutes to journal, then you're not taking that same 5 minutes to complain or to stew or to cry or to be mad. You're repurposing that 5 or 6 minutes it takes you to put your head down and start to work on the assignment. Right?
It's a very interesting thought. Thank you.
Well, are you going to try it?
I am.
Okay, good. I hope it works for you. If it doesn't, come back. We'll try something else.
Will do, Kathy. Thank you so much.
All right. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. Andy, you're next. Oh, what just happened? There it is. Trying to unmute you.
There we go.
Uh-oh. Did you mute yourself or did I? Oh, say something.
Hey, Kathy.
Oh, good. It worked.
Sorry. I think we were both doing it at the same time.
We may have been. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. What's up? I was originally going to ask about some realistic planning, but listening to, I think Melissa was her name. I think listening to you coach her answered a lot of those questions. So the other thing I'm really struggling with is my compelling reason. Okay. I'm actually coming to the transformation weekend. So
I'm
super excited about that. And so I've been doing a lot of journaling as the homework and, you know, 10 minutes every day. And that was hard, but I'm really doing it. And I still can't come up with, you know, really the compelling reason that resonates with me. Like I have lists of them, but I'm having trouble really focusing in on the maybe 3 to 5 that I could focus on.
Okay. So what do you think the compelling reason is supposed to do for you?
Well, I think primarily, I mean, health, I mean, is the first thing that comes up. Just that I've had some health issues that led to a weight gain in the last few years. So getting back to where I was, that comes up a lot. My parents, and I know you're going to tell me this is a thought, but my parents still judge my weight and I'm in my early 50s. And that's one of the things I want to work on the transformation weekend is letting go.
They're allowed to have an opinion.
Right. But I need to let that be theirs. But it still bothers me. I was down to a weight at one point where I had really cute clothes, you know, from not the plus size store. So I miss that.
So you know why your parents' opinions about your weight bothers you?
Do I know why? No. It's do you know why?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
You're annoyed with them.
Yes.
Because they have this thought that you probably have about yourself.
That's probably true, but they talk about it a lot too. So,
Well, they're allowed to.
Really? And how am I supposed to react to this? So here's how this works.
You get to decide how to react. How do you want to react? You can tell, look, I'm tired of hearing that. Or you can say, yep, you're right. You get to decide.
I'd never really thought about that. We don't live in the same city, but I see them probably 6 to 8 times a year. And I always know the first thing when I see them, they give me the look up and down to see, you know, where I'm at with my weight. They're in their early 70s, but they're both really fit. And, you know,
they're probably just worried about you.
Yeah, but I'm okay with the health part of worrying. To me, it's more about vanity for them. Like they certainly judge people about their weight. And like you said, that's their option to do that. But like, they're going to be here next Friday and I'm already stressing about what that's going to be like.
Okay. So your parents are not a good compelling reason.
True.
Right. Because it's not bringing up, you know, motivation or excitement. It's bringing up, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to see them again. And they're going to say something.
Yeah.
Right. So just as a sidebar to this conversation, what I would do is I would picture in my mind seeing them and them saying all the things, and picture you reacting like you want to react. You're right. And I'm working on it. Let me tell you what I'm doing, in fact. Now, can we put this to bed? Because I really want to enjoy my time with you.
Hmm. Yeah, I'd never really thought about that.
Yeah. Okay, so compelling reason is a great concept. It gives you something to think about in those moments where you're making an eating decision. Okay? Something, it might be a little goal that you have, you know, to be healthier, to get in on the floor with your grandkids, to wear cute clothes or whatever. It's one of those things that you bring to mind when you're staring at the ice cream cone and deciding whether or not to eat off plan.
Okay.
It's not the magic fairy dust that makes weight loss easy.
Oh, okay. That's helpful.
Right.
Because I keep feeling like I should have, with all this journaling, like some big aha moment, like, okay, that's it.
Yeah. Well, some people have that.
Okay.
But, you know, and some people have one good, strong reason. Other people might have 20 or 25 reasons.
Oh, okay.
Right. Mine was a good, strong reason because when I met Corinne, I met her the month after my first son got married. And his wife was one of eight, so I knew those kids were coming. I knew those grandkids were coming.
Yeah.
Right? I knew they were coming soon, too. In fact, they had the first one 13 months after they married, so I was right.
Right.
And I knew if I wanted to be the grandmother that could get up and down out of the floor and play and carry the kid up and down the stairs, I was going to have to do something.
Right.
Right. That, so mine was really good and strong. Other people, Corinne, she just wants to look good. Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, that's the other thing. You can't judge your reason. If it makes you feel good and it motivates you, it doesn't matter what it is. Yours could be, I want to be able to stand on my head. Nobody gets to judge that, and you don't judge it either. Okay?
Okay.
So you might have 8 or 10 or 20 things that you want to do or reasons you want to lose your weight.
Right.
And that's fine. In fact, Corinne did a call with John Acuff, who wrote the book Finish.
Right.
She did a call with him. If you go on the site and you look at, and you actually go to video replays and you search John Acuff, you'll find the call. He talks about compelling reasons and about how important it is for you to have lots of them.
Oh, okay.
Because in the moment when you're trying to decide whether or not to eat off plan, you know, looking cute in your clothes may or may not work for you. But, you know, you'll have to go through the list to find the one that says, you know, maybe that's it. You know, you might, you know, like looking good in your clothes might not work, but getting in and out of, up and out of the floor might. Right. So that's why you have a list. Andrea just said she has 30 of them. So it's okay to
have. Oh, I have a long list. None of them, just as I did them, you know, none of them felt like it sounds like you had one that was like, okay, that's it. That's really my reason. I don't have one of those. So I was thinking, do I need one? But now you're saying, no, I don't necessarily.
You don't need, have to.
But it's helpful to know all the reasons that you might.
Right. Reason. You might develop one over time, and you might not, and it's okay. That's the thing. I also wanted to look good in clothes. I didn't like being, you know, I used to say I was wide as I was tall. Not a very nice thing to say to myself, but that's what I used to say.
Right.
I wanted to wear comfortable shoes because my feet had gotten so wide and so swollen, you know.
Right.
I couldn't wear cute shoes. My feet were never comfortable. You know, there's all kinds of things. You just got to be sure that they're positive and motivating. You don't want compelling reasons like, because I hate the way I look. That's not a compelling reason.
Okay, so make sure they're positive.
Yes. Okay. So make sure they're not the beatdown. Make sure they're things that you actually want to look forward to.
Right. Okay.
Does that make sense?
I also have one other question about realistic planning. So is the idea that you make the plan and then you absolutely stick to that And that anything that you might, I know, like if you have an apple and an orange, like that's an equal trade. But is the idea that you eat exactly what you put on there every day?
Theoretically, yes.
Okay. I'm just having trouble with sometimes, I mean, I end up at a lot of work lunches and, mm-hmm. and things. And, you know, like sometimes I've put something down and then that's not it when I thought that was going to be an option and it's not.
Well, what if you were and on the work lunches, you could say whatever's offered to my two.
Right. I've done that a couple of times. So that's what I wonder if part of my problem is I'm getting too specific in situations where, you know, I don't necessarily have control. It's different when you're going into a restaurant, you have control over a menu. But if you're walking into a buffet lunch and you think it's one thing and then it's not.
And that's why I said theoretically, yes.
Okay.
You know, if you have 100% absolute control, then you don't need to be entertained in thoughts like, I don't feel like eating this, right?
Right.
Because that's, I mean, that's off plan, okay?
Right. But yeah, I deal with that too. And I get clearly, like, I planned this, it doesn't sound good. And it's like, no, you need to eat that anyway.
Ken and I planned salads, you know, I don't know, for lunch last weekend or something like that. And I got in the refrigerator and the lettuce was brown. Okay.
Yeah.
We couldn't have salads. So what I had to do was create a substitute. I considered that on plan because the substitute I created for that was just as good as a salad.
Okay? Right.
But my food wasn't available to me. Not because I didn't feel like eating it, but because it was brown lettuce and, you know, brown right. lettuce is a no-go, right?
Yeah.
So giving yourself options is a great idea.
Okay.
But also knowing that you can, if you've created, a lot of times we'll create every week we create a weekly plan.
Right.
A lot of times I'll swap the dinners Tuesday for Wednesday or something right. like that. And I consider that on plan as well.
Okay.
It's usually the thoughts behind the swap or behind the eating off plan that indicate whether or not it's on plan or off. If it's I really am tired and don't feel like fixing dinner, it's off plan. Right. Right? If it's a justification, it's off plan.
That makes sense. Okay.
Anything else?
No, I think that's it.
All right.
I'll see you soon.
All right. It is. It's like 5 weeks, right?
Is it? Yeah, I know it's soon. I'm excited.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks.
All right. We'll see you in 5 weeks.
All right.
Thank you.
See ya. All right. No one else's hand is raised, so I'm going to go to the Q&A. We got one over here. There we go. Jamie says, I have done good this week, not eating after dinner, but instead of sitting with my feelings, I get on Facebook all night and I've replaced food with Facebook. Good catch, Jamie. That's a great catch. So what are you going to do this week? You going to feel your feelings? Why don't you, instead of getting on Facebook and instead of eating, why don't you journal? Like, who was going to journal? Carolyn. In fact, you and Carolyn can talk, right? why don't you journal? Especially if you're avoiding feelings. If you journal, why am I feeling this? You'll see all the thoughts that come out and you get to evaluate them, right? That's the beautiful thing about it. Just like with Carolyn, she's going to get to evaluate all the really nasty crap that she's saying about her boss and about her job and about her work and decide if she wants to really think those thoughts, right? So, if you still want to get on Facebook, okay, but journal first and feel and then decide what you're going to do with the rest of your night. It's interesting. I don't eat after dinner. I just never have. It's not my thing. So this week I gave up snacking. And most of you know I plan an afternoon snack most every day. Sometimes I eat it, sometimes I don't. But I guarantee you I was starving to death at 3 and 3:30 every day this week because I knew I couldn't snack. So I had the drama in my head too. But what I did instead of going straight to Facebook was I felt the hunger and I got real curious about it. And I decided that I wanted to see it ebb and flow. I wanted to dine in and see how that worked. It's funny, I ate lunch before this call and I didn't eat very much because I wasn't, you know, I wasn't at -2 yet. I was at like -1, but I knew I would be up here for a long time. So it's like shift work, right? So I'm starting to feel hunger pains and I don't have snack planned and it's not 2 o'clock yet. So I'm going to be chugging the water this afternoon and feeling the feels because that's what you do. That's what you do when you want to be in control. You want to feel controlled. You just accept what's coming at you and you allow it to be there and you don't push against it. If I sat up here and said, I'm going to be so hungry. I'm going to be so hungry for the next 5 hours. I don't know how I'm going to handle it. How do you think my body's going to react, right? I'm going to be tensed up. I'm going to be angry. I'm going to be frustrated. But if I sit up here and say, okay, there's a little bit of hunger. Let's see if it comes and goes and I allow it to be there. It feels much easier. Amber says, thank you so much for coaching. Listening sets my weekend off on a positive note. I love office hours. You're welcome, Amber. All right, everybody. That's it. And it looks like we don't have any more hands. And it looks like we are just a couple of minutes before 2. So I think, let me check this chat real quick and make sure there's nothing here that, I don't see any question marks. I'm just scanning. Nothing here that needs to be attended to. Looks like you guys took care of yourself. All right, you guys have a great Saturday. And next office hours, I will tell you this. Today is Saturday, the 6th of July. I don't know if this call will be up tomorrow or not, but next week, office hours is Monday night, July 8th, with Betsy. She's back from vacation. Corinne Zoom on the Gift of Fat Month will be Tuesday night, July 9th. So there's a little bit of a schedule change next week that I want to make sure everybody knows about. All right, you guys, have a great Saturday, and I will see you soon. Bye-bye.